So today our talk is on mindfulness of the body. And we might ask ourselves why that mindfulness of the body is so important. And there are a number of quick answers, but the most important thing, I believe, is that it is within the body that we find our most readily available anchors. And that would include our breath. That would also include physical sensations that we have. If we're sitting down, the weight of our body, gravity pulling us against the seat, how our feet feel on the ground, maybe pulsing and warmth in our hands. But these are things that are always readily available for us to find when we've become untethered. It's not always easy, but it's always there and available for us to grab hold of those anchors and come back home. So spending time exploring, becoming more familiar with how these feelings and senses and pulsing and heat and cold, etc., aches, pains, how they live in our body and how to find them is pretty important. Another thing is that it is virtually impossible to be truly present in the moment if we aren't in our body. I sometimes feel like I live in this parallel universe. There's my physical presence marching along, and then my being with all my thoughts floating around outside. James Joyce put it pretty well in his book, The Dubliners. He said, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. That could be me. You know, our body tells us things about how we're feeling, about what's going on. Our emotions are manifested physically. It might be helpful right now to just take a moment to think back on times when something important happened to you. And you reacted with strong feelings, and they could be painful, fearful, angry feelings. Take a moment to think, where did that show up? Where did I feel it? Or maybe happy or surprised, right? Joyful. So take a moment just to reflect back on maybe a recent time when something a little out of the ordinary happened, and how did it feel in your body? Where did you recognize it? If it was a difficult experience, you might have done what most people do, which is to quickly try to make it go away or ignore it. You know, putting it under the rug, so to speak. If it was a pleasant feeling, you might have found yourself grasping as this experience was dissipating. You might have felt yourself chasing after it, longing for it. Feeling pretty disappointed as it passed. Why couldn't it just have lingered for a little more? If we can get in touch with being in our bodies, we can build that all-important awareness muscle that I've referred to. And that allows us to catch habits as they're forming, or to see habitual behaviors cropping up. And I think for me, one of the easiest examples of that is if I'm sitting and working at my desk, and all of a sudden I have this feeling inside that's, God, I would love some chocolate right now. And I can, just think about it right now. I can feel that sensation in my mouth as it anticipates what the chocolate will taste like. And in that anticipation, there's a shot of dopamine goes through me, which is like, this is good, go for it. And I traipse down the hall to the bedroom. And there's a little bag of Godiva chocolates, and I have one. Okay, so that doesn't make me a bad person. Clearly, I don't want that to happen a lot. But the key is that I could actually feel it happening. And if I am in that moment paying attention, as that feeling arises, that craving, I can hit the pause button and make a decision whether that's something I actually want to do or not. So that's one powerful, I believe, example of the importance of being in tune with what's happening in the body, being able to be receptive to these messages, and then be able to make more informed decisions how we react to them, and not simply reacting, not letting ourselves get hijacked by the amygdala, so to speak, which is that, you know, part of the brain that reacts emotionally. But so much of what we build our mindfulness practice on is based on this foundation of being curious, of bringing what I've called this kind attention to what's happening inside. James Barras, who is one of the teachers I was fortunate enough to have at my 7-day silent retreat last year at Estes Park in Colorado, says that mindfulness is simply being aware of what's happening right now without wishing it were different. Enjoying the pleasant without holding on to it when it changes, which it will, and being with the unpleasant without fearing it will always be this way, for it won't. Both the good, the bad, and the ugly are fleeting. Pema Chodron, who's a very wise and respected teacher of mindfulness in the West, says it's also helpful to realize that this very body that we have, that's sitting here right now with its aches and its pleasures, is exactly what we need to be fully human, fully awake, fully alive. You know, that sense of being fully alive. I remember the story of a couple of hunters. They were in the woods in New Jersey, and suddenly one of the hunters was on the ground and motionless, apparently having a heart attack, and his friend panicked. Really didn't know what to do, but he had his phone with him and he dialed 911. And the 911 operator said, "Well, so what's going on?" He said, "I'm pretty sure my friend's had a heart attack. I think he's dead." And the 911 operator said, "Well, you should make sure." So The man puts the phone down. The 911 operator can hear a shot. The phone gets picked back up and he goes, okay, now what? One of my teachers, Jack Kornfield, who spent so many years as a Tibetan monk when he came back to the States and was one of the real champions of mindfulness movement in the West, was visited by one of his teachers, a wise Tibetan monk, a lama, and the lama said, so now I understand, after watching Jack speak, he said, in America, the teacher tells a joke, and as the students are laughing and their mouths are open, he pops in wisdom. I hope from time to time I can add a little wisdom to that. Our universal conditioning is to move away from the moment. If something's unpleasant, it triggers this reaction to retreat. It's a threat, and we move away from threat. And I think you recall I've said that, you know, the brain is scanning the environment up to 5 times a second, trying to determine what it can trust and what it can't trust, what's good, what's bad. And there's 5 times more real estate in our brain dedicated to noticing and reacting to threat than there is to noticing and reacting to reward. But it will do both. But the default is threat. And it wants to move away from threat. So it's going to make a decision to remove ourselves from the situation where the threat is happening. And these days, the threat could easily be simple interactions, social. And the same part of the brain reacts whether this threat is perceived as physical or social. It's very interesting. It doesn't distinguish between that. So the brain says, get out of here. And we move away, figuratively, typically. And this is how we evolved and we survived. So in the beginning, back in the days when we were sharing the planet with very dangerous animals, we didn't survive because we were faster or stronger. We survived because we were smarter, and we created this kind of control tower. They could spot where we needed to avoid, and that over time became the process by which we separated ourselves from our physical presence. Not in the beginning, but over time. So to really inhabit our bodies means we have to be willing to surrender to what feels like out of control. Our brain is saying, move away, move away. But if we want to be present, even with what is unpleasant, we have to resist that call to retreat. Now, again, what I'm talking about is a reaction to feelings. I'm not talking about reacting to an actual physical threat. Someone has a knife. That's a different situation. But every single day we have instances where things happen that feel unpleasant or in a some way kind of threatening us in some respect, and we want to take off figuratively. So it's not easy to resist that, but ultimately it's really worthwhile. So earlier this week, I had an email from a close friend of mine. and they wanted to get together and talk. And I could sense from the tone of the email that this wasn't going to be warm and fuzzy, but it was something important. So we set up a time. My friend came in. We hugged. And it was one of those hugs that felt very perfunctory. It was not a lot of warmth involved. And so immediately I was getting those physical cues that there was a chill. And in fact, my friend said, I hope that when I leave, my goodbye hug is something I can really mean. Well, the next hour was an opportunity for my friend just to unload on me, sharing what had built up over the course of a year or so. Deep anger, deep frustration, deep hurt. Now, as she began, I could feel the defense mechanism welling up inside me, and being attuned to this, I was able to hit the pause button and not react, because I knew intellectually that what she needed was free rein just to share without being interrupted. In fact, she said so much, but even when someone tells you they don't want to be interrupted, the instinct to defend yourself is really strong. But I could feel that my hands starting to sweat. I could feel my heart start to race. I could feel that welling inside me, which was, yo, fight or flight. You got to do something because this isn't feeling good. But recognize it. I hit the pause and just paid complete attention to every word that was being said because it was that important. Not only was it important to me to hear it, but it was important for her to sense that I was there. And she could see my reaction with a tear coming down. Maybe more than one. When she was finished, I said, I can't thank you enough for not holding back. First of all, for sharing your hurt. For trusting me enough that you could bring the full force of it. And you really helped me because I didn't have to read between the lines. It was all there. Especially in the beginning, it didn't feel good. But instead of pushing it away and allowing my fight or flight reaction to take over, I paused, stayed in the moment, was available. And as my friend left, the hug she gave me was one of redemption and restoration. I could feel it. Tara Brach talks about the way that we dissociate our bodies and minds in an effort to control, to move away from pleasant towards, away from unpleasant towards pleasant. I refer to that mental control tower. But if we think of our bodies as this metaphor for a house, and we may be in one part of the house, let's say the playroom with a young nephew of ours, little toddler, and the toddler all of a sudden just starts being really needy. Not our kid per se, but just you know, a relation, but they're needy, and they start crying and pounding, and we got things to do, and we want to move away from that, and we physically separate ourselves from the playroom and maybe move up to the second floor where our office is and put on headphones. Noise-canceling headphones. Start working on the computer to get away from the unpleasantness of the screaming. But the fact of the matter is that screaming is not going to stop necessarily. It may, but it may not. And all we've done is to physically distance ourselves without attending to what the root problem was. And the root problem may have been that that willful child just needed us to give some attention. And you know, it takes energy to dissociate and leave our body and to pretend we're not seeing something or feeling something, or to physically move. But if that's a figurative movement, it still takes energy to do that. And that can wear us down. We can also start to develop unhealthy habits that help us escape. And we know what they are. They could be something as simple as eating, overeating, binge eating. Misusing alcohol, drugs, sex. Anything to sort of move us away from what that present experience was happening. Take us away from that. Now, sensations can only happen in the here and now, right? They're not happening in the past. They're not happening in the present. They're happening in the here and now. So if we can bring our attention to any sensations, we are, in fact, returning to the present moment. And here's the great part about that. We can do it at any time, in any place. And we don't need any special equipment because we carry around our body. And it really could be something as simple as sitting quietly at a Panera. Maybe you're waiting to meet someone or waiting for your food to be prepared. And instead of pulling out your phone, just sitting, noticing what's around. Maybe tuning in instead of tuning out to the cacophony, different sounds. A voice here, a voice there, not telling you to eavesdrop, but just, you know, or just check out the drama of the people going by. Again, don't stare, but you might notice that couple that's been married for 60. So there are lots of different ways that we can enjoy and practice being in the moment. At Panera, just driving our car, just having the radio off and noticing the road for the first time, maybe spotting some potholes you hadn't seen or different road signs. How about brushing your teeth? Just taking the time to feel what it, the brush against your teeth, the inside, the outside. In the shower, the feeling, the sensation of the water hitting you. Shaving. All these are just simple daily chances to practice. Doesn't mean we have to do it every single time. But maybe from time to time. And one of the things we so often fail to do is really appreciate our food. Slow down. What does it taste like? Maybe even thinking, where did it come from? So there's this dance between going up into our thoughts and figuratively leaving our body and then catching ourselves with our awareness muscle and coming back home. And each time we come back home, it's a cause for celebration. We can begin again at any time. And I'd love to share with you, as I close this talk, a poem from Dana Faltz. And I truly think that it captures the power of being in the moment and being truly present in our bodies. Trust the energy that courses through you. Trust, then take surrender even deeper. Be the energy. Don't push anything away. Follow each sensation back to its source in vastness and pure presence. Emerge so new, so fresh that you don't know who you are. Welcome in this season of monsoons. Be the bridge across the flooded river and the surging torrent underneath. Be unafraid of consummate wonder. Be the energy and blaze a trail across the clear night sky like lightning. Dare to be your own illumination. I wish you blessings. And I pray that you can, in fact, be that blazing trail of light across this clear night sky and to be your own illumination.